I am now calling the Health Sciences Committee meeting to order at 9:10 a.m. First order of business is roll call.
Chair Page?
Here.
Vice Chair Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Levine?
Here.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent Moran? Regent Trachok, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Just for clarification, we realize Chair Page is on the phone. I will be directing the meeting today. First item of business is public comment. Chief General Counsel Reynolds.
We have no public comment, Chair Carvalho.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Item number two, minutes from the previous meeting. Are there any questions or comments regarding that? I'll entertain a motion.
This is Regent McAdoo. I so move to accept the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Chair Page. Any other questions, comments regarding the minutes? All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number three, Chair's report. Chair Page, do you have anything?
Just a couple quick things. Thank you, Vice Chair Carvalho. I just want to thank all the institutions on their response to the COVID-19 pandemic across the leadership role. And we want to thank everyone because we know how hard everyone worked on that. So we really appreciate that. And then the second thing I want to just say is I want to thank and welcome Gene Kahn. This is his first meeting. And so we welcome him to UNLV in Nevada. With that, that's my report.
Thank you, Chair Page. I'd also like to echo what you just mentioned about all of the members of the schools of medicine and all of the healthcare professionals that work under ENSHE. I'm very proud to be a part of this right now. You are certainly our heroes, so thank you. Item number four, UNR School of Medicine report. Dean Schwenk.
Thank you, Vice Chair Carvalho, Chair Page, members of the Health Sciences Committee. I'd also like to open my remarks by welcoming Dr. Mark Kahn to UNLV. He arrives at a very tumultuous time, of course. We had intended to have a more proper greeting for him on campus in June, and we'll defer that to some later time. But he and I have had some excellent discussions, and we've committed to standing meetings, which I appreciate very much. I look forward to an excellent working relationship. You have my outline in front of you, as is my custom. I will embellish on a few items. With regard to the pandemic, I'll comment that we have managed this for the last 3 months with what we call our Coronavirus Action Team, Crisis Action Team, or CCAT. This stood up in the early days, met daily, sometimes twice a day, sometimes through the weekend, to manage a whole host of clinical and academic and research decisions as they came along. And that has now waned in managing the upswing of the pandemic. And now we've switched to what we call our Reentry and Reengagement Action Team, or RRAT, which is now managing the reentry with a whole different set of issues. It's composed of about 16 people, covers all aspects of the school and university health. And it's been a very dedicated and very active and very wise group. I'll skip my introduction of Dr. Pandori because you met him yesterday and he gave an outstanding presentation about the State Public Health Lab. I'll comment that with regard to our management of this entire process, that we have put a tremendous amount of energy into managing faculty and staff wellness and support. There are a lot of mental health issues that arise from this pandemic, and there are more to come. Coming out of the crisis is when a lot of well-being issues tend to emerge. And we are putting a lot of energy into a whole host of both institutional and individual clinical types of services to support people. Item 1D, I was also going to personally introduce Mr. Mike Herbert, who I mentioned last time. He has been with us now for several months, helping us in an interim role as the Senior Associate Dean for Administration and Finance, but perhaps you'll have a chance to meet him in person next time as well. I wanted to comment in, under general issues about our specific partnership with the Sierra Nevada VA healthcare system. This partnership continues to grow. It's thriving. There are a whole host of programs that have developed joint faculty recruitment, certainly the joint appointment of Dr. Mark Riddle, who is our Associate Dean for Clinical Research and the VA's Associate Chief of Staff for Research. We are also continuing to explore the potential co-branding or co-location of facilities, and we are awaiting the report of a federal site visit team and a federal contractor who's commenting on a new facility for the VA. So I wanted to make sure that you knew about that. With regard to undergraduate medical education, as you know, all medical students and PA students across the country were pulled from all of their clinical experiences in roughly mid-March. They have now restarted. PA students started a week ago Monday. Our medical students started this past Monday. I think everybody is relieved that they're back on their clerkships, most of all the students. And it has helped a tremendous amount to get back to normal business. They've been well received and they've settled in very well. And we are back on schedule with some adjustments to make sure that we get the current third year medical students finished before the rising third year medical students come into play. As you know, we had virtual match day and commencement ceremonies. I just wanted to highlight the extraordinary performance of our events team in developing truly creative virtual events. We have a weekly meeting on Monday nights of all medical school deans. And so we hear a lot of the plans that other schools followed for match day and commencement, and I will put ours up against any of them in terms of their creativity. I also wanted to highlight under 2C, our medical student and physician assistant student volunteer service. We are up now to well over 4,000 hours of volunteer service that were provided to the Washoe County Health District, Washoe County School District, Elko County, REMSA, the City of Sparks, and other agencies in terms of telephone triage and counseling and testing services while the students were off their clerkships, and they performed extraordinarily well. I'll give you some numbers for medical student admissions. We had about 1,600 applications. We asked for secondary applications from about 800. We admitted 98 students, and we now have received acceptances from 70 students. It's once again another outstanding class. Average MCAT was 509, average grade point 3.7. 26% Black and Hispanic underrepresented minority students, which is an increase for us. 30% first generation, 19% rural, exactly half and half male and female. So we're very pleased and have another outstanding class. I'll give you the same update for physician assistant students. For the class of 2022, we had 1,360 applications. We interviewed 89 and we selected 24. Average age of 27. Interestingly, the PA students are older than medical students because they've had many years of work experience. In this class, they had an average of about 5,500 hours of paid medical care work of some sort before coming into school. Also comment on the match results for our students. We had an outstanding match. Everyone matched, very high level of programs, a wide range of programs, never as many staying in Nevada as we would like because we, of course, don't have all the programs we would like, but we did well in that regard and a good showing in primary care as well. Continuing on with graduate medical education, the reverse side of the match for our students is the match to our residency programs. We filled all of our spots and had an outstanding match result, 43 new residents total who matched to our programs. 34 were American medical graduates, which is a significant increase for us. Our entire internal medicine residency program matched with American grads, which was a goal. Not to comment at all on graduates from other schools, but there is, I think, some emphasis on focusing on American grads. I'll comment briefly on the impact of the pandemic on residents. You know, we have 147 residents total, and they are all on the front lines. And so I appreciate the comments from Vice Chair Carvalho and Chair Page about how the healthcare workers stood up during this crisis. 147 residents were all in the hospital, all on the front lines at some point or another. And they've maintained their morale and they've maintained their service. Item four, University Health Clinical Network Development. This is, as you know, a major focus for us. We have really ramped up our branding of University Health as our clinical arm, and we are working very hard on expanding that clinical platform, on improving productivity, on improving quality and safety performance, and it's gone extremely well. Coronavirus Action Team, CCAT, focused a lot on policies and responding to the crisis, and we worked through that in terms of shifting virtual care for a number of weeks, and now shifting back to in-person care. We were at a deficit when the pandemic hit, but we were on our way out, and we expected to break even by the end of this fiscal year. But that, of course, is not going to happen. We were looking at a significant hole because of the pandemic. That hole was partially filled by paycheck loan program, paycheck protection loan program, and some CMS funds. There were some CMS rescue funds that came through Medicare that helped. And we have continued to enhance our performance overall. So I think we're going to end up in a deficit, but not nearly what we might have because we did pull through in reasonable shape. My guess is roughly 500,000 in the hole for now. But we hope to recover that on into the next fiscal year. The other comment I wanted to make on 4D is for you to be aware of something very exciting, not related to the pandemic, and that is that our Department of Pathology has had a concerted effort to reach out across the state and actually into Eastern California and Northern California to secure medical directorships on a whole host, I think now approaching 10 or more small hospital clinical laboratories. And we have become sort of the go-to source of expertise for running these medical laboratories in these small hospitals. We are highly sought by these CEOs and hospital boards to partner with them. And what that's done is to open up opportunities for teaching. So just recently, for example, we had an inquiry from one of our hospital partners who wanted to start to place our students in their emergency room, which is a highly desired rotation. So I just wanted to highlight how well that's going by our chair of pathology, Dr. Erling, and the department. And finally, I'll conclude with research. Yet another introduction that we'll have to skip, Dr. Lucia Natterpeck, who's our new associate dean for biomedical research. Dr. Natterpeck comes to us from the University of Florida, where she was chair of the Department of Neuroscience. She's an esteemed neuroscientist, heavily funded, and works in the area of peripheral neuropathies. And she has arrived in the middle of this. It's been a little difficult to onboard a new leader like that, but we are very enthused about her presence, and she has already engaged our basic science chairs and faculty, doing a great job there. A couple final comments. Our clinical research center has ramped up to partner with Renown on a COVID-19 antibody study, and turned right around to partner with Renown on a convalescent plasma study as well. So the public health lab and Renown and the School of Medicine are all connected on these studies, and it's an example of a great research partnership that's taking place. A number of our basic scientists are working in the COVID-19 area, point-of-care diagnostic tests, some studies on more basic mechanisms for why the coronavirus, for example, affects the sense of smell. And I'll conclude with a very positive note, which is that in the recent U.S. News and World Report rankings, one of the sub-rankings had to do with external funding for FTE for basic scientists. And I'm pleased to note that we were ranked 34th in the country in research funding dollars per FTE scientist. We don't do well in general in those rankings because they're heavily weighted towards larger schools and a popularity poll. But in terms of that specific metric, which is research dollars per FTE, we're ranked 34th in the country. And I'm very proud of our basic scientists in that regard. So with that, Vice Chair Carvalho, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dean Schwenk. Are there any questions or comments from the committee?
Vice Chair Carvalho, I have one if I may. Dean Schwenk, I know when we started the Physician's Assistant Program, we limited it because we wanted to make sure we got it right and we were getting people through the program appropriately, but there was an intention to expand it. And I'm wondering what the timeline is for expanding the program with the great need we have for it.
Yes, we would love to. The limitation was partly ours, but partly the accrediting body. They are actually very clear that we are accredited for 24 slots for, I believe it's 5 years, and we will prove that we can do well in those first 5 years, and then we can expand a bit. I think our intent at that point is to go to possibly 30 students, given resources and clinical teaching capacity. My guess is 36 is probably the max, but we won't go there for a while.
Thank you. Vice Chair Dubrava.
Thank you, Vice Chair Carvalho. Dean Schwenk, very nice to see you. I want to echo the comments that Chair Page and Regent Carvalho had mentioned for the participation and the assistance that you lent to the state with the students and the residents and the scientists and with the state lab also being on the campus of UNR School of Medicine, valuable asset for the entire state. So thanks again. I did have a question when you talked about the practice plan. You mentioned the Paycheck Protection Program funds that the school participated with, the CMS funds. Did the school, did you do any of the advanced Medicare payment kind of a loan? I don't know if that was looked at.
Yes, we were well aware of that and we considered that, but all it is really an advanced payment to sort of maintain cash flow, and we were not in need from a cash flow perspective, and we thought that it actually was difficult to track because eventually, of course, it gets reconciled and there's a payback. So we really focused more on funds that were actually incremental funds, like the CMS funds and the PPP program.
Thank you for that answer. And if I could have one follow-up, just a comment. Dean Schwenk, and also you'd mentioned about your residency match, not only from the students doing well, but also with your residency programs, that there's been maybe a shift towards more, I would say, LCME U.S. graduates, which I think is beneficial for the school.
Right. And
so thank you for that.
Yeah, we have worked hard. And again, I do not want at all to get into comparisons of sources of students, but we know that we would like to focus a bit more on, as you say, LCME accredited graduates, and we were very pleased with that outcome.
Regent Levine, did you have a question or comment? No.
No, I just have very bad allergies today, so I apologize if I'm itching my nose a lot.
No problem. Okay. Thank you, Dean Schwenk, for that always very detailed report. Before we go on to the next item, I believe we may have one or two members of the committee that have joined us. Regent Trachok, are you there? We saw that he logged in.
I am, and I have no questions.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. And also, Regent Moran, are you there? Okay. We'll move on to item number 5, UNLV School of Medicine report. Welcome, Dr. Khan. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be with everybody. I wish I could be there in person. I'd like to thank the chairman. I'd like to thank the Board of Regents, presidents, guests. I'd also, for the record, by the way, Mark Kahn, Dean, UNLV School of Medicine. We'd also like to congratulate Dr. Mark DeBrava for his election to chair of the Board of Regents. So if I could have my next slide, please. I wanted to just provide a brief introduction. I have spent the past 25 years at Tulane, and prior to that, I was at Penn as a trainee, and I'm really, really excited to be here. I think that there's a lot of palpable enthusiasm. I thank the Board of Regents again for their support moving forward and in the past, and I think there's really a lot of excitement and reason for optimism in spite of a pandemic and some dire economic conditions. From a COVID-19 response perspective, we have been doing curbside testing. My vice dean is going to give you some of the details, but we've been doing curbside testing for upwards of 12 weeks now, and for a long time, we're actually leading the state in our curbside testing program. I'm also happy to report that, like my colleague at University of Nevada, Reno, we started a post-convalescent plasma program. We were up and running about 3 weeks after I arrived. I'm a hematologist, so I was pretty passionate about getting that up and running. And again, I think still that convalescent plasma, that being plasma from folks who have recovered from the virus, is still one of the best tools we have in our toolbox to fight this viral infection. Many of our practitioners, our students, our residents, and our faculty have been on the front line, as in Reno, and we've had really extensive student volunteers, both in call centers as well as other places that I'm going to get to in a minute. As a new dean, you know, our priority is to care for our community, and we do that through education, we do that through research, we do that through clinical care, and importantly, through community engagement. And just in the short time that I've been here, we've worked with the community to make sure that our students and faculty have places to volunteer to help our community. We've also had a top priority, obviously, is accreditation. We go up for our full accreditation visit this October, and we're well on our way to putting that report together. We also have been working hard to work with our loyal donors and supporters to make sure that they support the school in these difficult times. I'd like to talk a second about medical student class. If I could have the next slide. It's a bit out of date. We have 60 students in our class. We now have 36 men and 24 women. We'd like that to be 50-50, and there are some reasons for that. We actually accepted more women this year than men, but had a lower accept rate. Our average GPA, as you can see, is 3.72 with 3.61 in basic sciences. Our average MCAT is 513, and I'm happy to report that this data is old. We actually have 59 of our 60 incoming students being legal residents of the state of Nevada. And again, that's consistent with our mission to improve workforce for our state. We also have over 20% of folks that are typically underrepresented in medicine. And another one of our designated diversity categories are first-generation students. 30% are first-generation college students. 32% are economically disadvantaged, as indicated on their application, their AMCAS application. And you can see we also want to attract veterans and rural students. So we're overall happy with the class. We need to do a little bit better with gender diversity, and we're going to work on that for the upcoming year. If I could have the next slide. As Dr. Schwenk said, our first year instruction was online, as was the rest of the country. Our virtual clerkships, so these are for our third-year students, became virtual on March 30th, and these were faculty-directed and specialty-specific. This past June 1st, our new clinical students started back in their rotations, and our preclinical students will start in the next month or so. If I can have the next slide, I think, you know, we're also, as is Dr. Schwenk, concerned about the mental health of really our entire community, but certainly our students, and we're monitoring that. The Association of American Medical Colleges has restricted some in-person clinical education, and the centers that give tests for the STEP exams were closed. They've just reopened, so that fortunately our students for their STEP 1 exam take them earlier than many places in the country. And of the students that took their test, we had over a 96%, actually a 97% pass rate. So we're very encouraged by that. I'd also like to talk a little bit, if I can have the next slide, about some of the things that our students were doing with the COVID epidemic. Our students, again, staffed a call center where they screened patients so they could come to our curbside testing, which we did regardless of ability to pay. Our students worked in some of the makeshift clinical facilities during an anticipated COVID surge. And our students also worked in our partner University Medical Center to help unburden some more of the advanced providers. And this did not expose our students to COVID positive patients, but these were other activities so that our licensed physicians could actually care for folks that were COVID positive. And again, we talked about the call center also to coordinate nonprofit services for vulnerable populations. Again, I'm really proud of our students. I'm proud of our faculty and staff for stepping up during the epidemic and helping to care for the Las Vegas community. If I could have the next slide, please. So we, from graduate medical education, we have 325 residents and fellows. We matched 83 first-year residents in March. Nearly 20% of them came from Nevada medical schools, and 100% of them came from LCME-accredited medical schools. Our new residents have already started orientation and are going to begin their clinical rotations in just a couple weeks. We had a resident and fellows research day that was very successful. And we have, we're happy to announce, we actually have two new fellowship programs, one in endocrinology and one in geriatrics that have been ACGME approved that are going to start this year. And again, all of our graduate medical education programs and sponsoring institutions have received continuing accreditation and full accreditation from the ACGME. If I could have the next slide on research. As is true across the country, our clinical trials are put on hold due to COVID-19. We hope to for them to open up soon, and our total School of Medicine research expenditures were approximately $3.7 million. It's all of our goal, and certainly my goal, to grow our research portfolio moving forward, recognizing we're a school that's only 3 years old. If I could have the next slide, from the faculty affairs perspective, again, our faculty affairs office reached out, and we have some community partners, including Zappos and others, who provided care packages for folks working with COVID on the front line. We're also about to start a warehousing system for faculty affairs called eFolio that'll be good for us to keep track of our faculty and their accomplishments. We're re-looking at our community faculty program to make sure that the community faculty are engaged with our school. And again, you know, this has been a new normal for all of us. So I neglected to actually congratulate Regent DiCarlo as vice chair, and I'd like to make that congratulatory statement. Again, thank you all for welcoming me to Nevada and the Las Vegas community. I'm really looking forward to moving forward, improving the care of our community, and working with each and every one of you. I'd now like to turn the clinical affairs and finance over to my vice dean for clinical affairs and strategy, Dr. Mike Gardner. Dr. Gardner.
Good morning, Regents. Good morning, Vice Chair Carvalho, Chair Page on the phone. Go to the next slide, please. So I just want to go over a few numbers. Obviously, we turn in these things early. There's been several things that have been updated. I'd like to update based on what we have here. We've, as of today, we will have completed our 12th week of testing. We're confident that on a Monday through Friday basis, that our curbside testing is the longest continuous testing without a break. We started in March, and we've been going ever since. About 6 weeks into our 12 weeks, give or take a week, our friends from the National Guard joined us, and that's been very helpful, and we're very appreciative. We just heard literally in the last 48 hours that their deployment has been extended to the end of July. So at least for the time being, we're planning on continuing the curbside testing in some form through the month of July. We were doing 8 to 5. We modified our hours to 7:30 to 12:30 because most of you know it gets a little hot in Las Vegas in July, and just to protect our employees from being outside in the on the asphalt. I do want to just take a moment. You know, our MAs, our medical assistants, our residents, some faculty have been out there every single day. And again, in the heat, in the wind, some days with less than pleasant conditions. And we're now just taking anybody that wants to come. And we have a lot of people who just drive up, and we get them in and we get them tested. We are moving also into antibody testing, and we hope to have antibody testing up and running by the end of July. I mean, by the end of June, sorry. We are also going to some organizations. This past week, on Monday and Tuesday, we went to Opportunity Village. Many of you who are in the Las Vegas area are aware of their wonderful work. We tested over 750 of their employees in a two-day period at their Ingolstadt campus of Opportunity Village. We're looking into doing some with some other organizations, doing the same thing. So while maintaining our curbside testing near our clinic, we'll also be going out in the community doing some testing. Like everybody else that practices medicine in the United States, this is the largest layoff of healthcare employees across the United States in known history. That seems counterintuitive to many in the middle of a pandemic that healthcare is taking such a big hit, but we saw in the first 2 weeks of the stay-at-home order a 50% drop in our clinic volume. That stayed in the 30s and into the 20s. Last week was the first week that we were actually back less than 20%. We're still down 15%. Our goal is to get it back by mid-July, back to where we were in January and February. We're calling patients. We're texting people. We never closed. We just had a lot of people who were afraid to come to clinic. We did expand telemedicine, particularly in Mojave, our mental health clinic and such, and while that was helpful, it didn't make up for our loss of clinic volume. other things that are important, we also, as Dean Swank pointed out, we also went in for the payment protection program. Happily in May, we received a check for a little over $4 million. That really helped us a lot because we did have a significant drop in cash flow. We saw close to a $750,000 a month decrease in cash flow over both in April and in May. And our visits, our clinic billings were down over $1.3 million per month based on the decreased number of patients that were coming in. That CARES Act has allowed us to keep our employees on the payment protection program. We had our first talk with Grant Thornton about this year's audit. We asked him about how this is booked because this is obviously unusual. What the guidance from Grant Thornton is that goes on your balance sheet. It does not go on your statement, your financial statement, until it's confirmed that either A, you have to pay it back, at which time it becomes a liability, or B, you get forgiven, at which time it becomes an asset. Neither of those two things will be determined until the next year after July 1st. So we will not be applying that $4.1 million to our balance sheet or to our financial statement this year. But it may be applied to our financial statement in the coming budget year. I'm going to skip the next one because I want to come back to that. we were on pace to reduce our annual losses before the COVID shutdown by half, from over 7 million to under 4 million. We're going to now, we're looking like we're going to finish the year in the range of about 7 million based on the hits that we've taken over the last 3 months. We're hoping June's a little bit better, but March was a hit, and definitely April and May were bad months for us. What we owe the school, or what we owe the INSHE, we're predicting should be just under $7 million when we turn in the report of June 30. So we've been trying to not let that grow. That's approximately where we were at the end of March. We were hoping to pay that down, but with the financial hit we took, we were frankly struggling to make sure that we didn't increase that amount. One of the problems that we have two or three issues that we're going to be dealing with in the coming year when it comes to our financial statement. One of the problems we have, one of our two, actually our largest problem, is that we have $4 million in charges of uncompensated, otherwise known as free care, that we provide at UMC. Because it's free care, there is no discount. There is no, so we write that off, the 100% of that, and we collect very little of that. This is why in years past, there was over $3 million a year that was given from UMC, first to UNR, and then for the first year of UNLV's existence, to help compensate, to help offset that large amount of free care. We have, I know Dean Kahn, as well as myself, as well as Joanne Strobe, we've all had these conversations with Mr. Van Helling, as well as his senior staff. If you've read the papers, you know that they're concerned between having somewhere between a $50 and a $200 million loss in this upcoming year because of their volumes are down about 50%. So we are sensitive to the fact that they're also facing some significant financial challenges. But simply put, the practice plan will not be able to be in the black as long as we're providing $4 million a year of uncompensated care. That's something we're going to have to deal with as we come out of the coronavirus crisis. In the coming year, we're going to need to deal with that reality if we want to move towards the black. Frankly, the budget we have starting next year, which was a conservative budget, if we were able to deal with even three quarters of this uncompensated care, the practice plan is looking very good for the coming year. Certainly close, if not break even. That's the end of my report, and I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Are there any questions for Dr. Gardner or for Dr. Dean Kahn?
Yeah, Mr. Gardner, this is Lisa Levine, and I'm just trying to learn very quickly. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the $7 million owed to NICHI?
The number one expense for the practice plan is the faculty salaries. So people like me who are physicians who work for the School of Medicine are paid by UNLV, right? So in my clinical work and those kind of things, basically UNLV Medicine buys my time, if you will, and gets the billing and collections for the clinical work that I do. That's true for all of our faculty. By far and away, that's our number one expense. So the two things that there's a few other things. UNLV actually buys the pays for the malpractice and the malpractice, and so that we get the sovereign immunity. The practice plan reimburses UNLV for that. And there's also leases. UNLV happens to be our biggest landlord. Our biggest there's a couple buildings, but mainly the 1707 building, which is our largest clinic building, is actually owned by UNLV. And the UNLV Medicine, which is a separate 501c3, pays leases. But by far and away, the majority of that money is for faculty salaries.
Thank you. Do you have a one pager that you could share with us, breaking down a little bit more the services to UMC that encompass that $4 million gap of uncompensated funds?
Sure, we can provide that for you.
That would be great. I think it'll help make the case, right, that you're serving the community and the patients whom you're serving, the diversity of those patients. I think the impact to the community is really important to show
that. Regent Levine, as I would make an invitation to you as when other members have come onto the board. We've had we've hosted for a 2-hour, 3-hour visit to the practice plan where we can give you as long as you can be as long as you want, but certainly in a couple hours we can let you know exactly where we are and those kind of things. Just because we have 17 different clinics spread over 4 or 5 different buildings across, and it takes a little bit to get on top of all that. So we'd be happy at your convenience if you'd like to come to West Bay. We would me and my senior leadership would be thrilled to go over all those things with you.
I'd appreciate that. If we can coordinate something for even next week, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And thank you for all the great work you've done serving the community on COVID-19. You've done a phenomenal job on testing, and I know a lot of our elected officials feel the same way. So thank you very much.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. I wanted to echo what Regent Levine had said about, you know, one page of information would help us present our case to our friends on the county commission and our friends at the city council of Las Vegas, you know, as they put that medical district together, and with UNLV trying to be a good partner with UMC, this is information that we have to kind of get out there, that it's certainly everyone's going through a budget constraint, but I think the taxpayer would feel a little comfortable knowing that every rare dollar that's being spent between UMC, if it was going to UNLV School of Medicine, at least it's a public hospital going to a public medical school. So I think there's some expectations there, and we certainly hope that that comes together. I also wanted to welcome Dean Kahn.
Thank you.
I was just going to welcome Dean Kahn. Certainly arriving here, I think April 1st was your first official day, and we had this pandemic to make things even more challenging, plus some of the finances going on with the practice plan. But we have faith in you and your vice dean, Michael Gardner, that we can get through this. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent DeBrava. Thank you for all your support. And again, I think, you know, moving forward, we want to care for the community and want to make sure that we're certainly fiscally responsible. But, you know, the finances that Dr. Gardner presented, I think we have to keep in perspective that monies lost were lost caring for our community. And that's really important to us. That's not to say that we're ignoring the financial reality, but, you know, we have an obligation to the people of Las Vegas. So
I can just ask a follow-up question just to kind of piggyback off of what Regent DeBrava's remarks were. Dean Kahn, you are coming into a very politically sensitive situation, unfortunately, and I myself am too as a new regent and here for a short period of time. I do think it's important not only that you would have me next week, but also perhaps some of our colleagues on the County Commission and City of Las Vegas, so they can better understand the gravity of the work you're doing. I think there's a lot of opportunity for relationships to be strengthened from previous people who are in your position. And so I do encourage you to do that, and that's something that I can help you with.
Regent Levine, that would be terrific. You know, I've been in the process of meeting as many folks as I can over my past 8 or 9 weeks here, but certainly any help you or the other regions could provide, I'd appreciate. I'd love to, you know, I'm not shy about telling people what our mission is, what our vision is, and what we're here to do. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for that, Dean Kahn. In the interest of time, unless there are any other pressing comments or questions, I'd like to move on to item number 6, NG nursing programs during the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Donnelly, we have 10 minutes for you. If there's any way that you can shrink that just a little bit, I'd greatly appreciate it.
The conference is about to end.
Sure, I will let's do this. So good morning, Regents. For the record, I am Dr. Amber Donnelly. I'm the Dean of Health Sciences and Human Services at Great Basin College. It's my pleasure today to do a short presentation, very short, on NG Nursing Program's response to COVID-19. I'm gonna start with Nevada State College. They graduated 78 BSN students in their pre-licensure program and 22 RN to BSN students in May. They wanted to highlight one of their students, Erica Homel, who's a first-year student part-time, who was interviewed on Channel 13, KTVN. Erica is the owner of Meal Prep Las Vegas. Erica delivered free meals to seniors and those with compromised immune systems and wanted to show the community positive attributes of nurses giving back to the community. In spite of the challenges of online program delivery, Nevada State is admitting 32 full-time and 32 part-time students for summer start, which is higher than what their normal enrollment is. Sorry, could you guys hear me? I think I just hit mute, but I'm back up here. So the School of Nursing adjusted the fall application deadline to accommodate the need for more online entrance exams, and Nevada State is providing virtual proctoring for students to be able to test from home. Their physical and life science department donated all their PPE to local health care agencies. Faculty and staff have also partnered with Vegas Fighting for COVID to produce PPE using 3D printers. The School of Nursing faculty who are involved in community and healthcare organizations are assisting to provide online services. Your School of Nursing faculty successfully and quickly converted all face-to-face courses, labs, and clinicals to online in order to disrupt, to avoid any disruption for their nursing students. The TMCC Maxine S. Jacobs Nursing Program changed to online environments on March 23rd. Students were informed of these challenges through email, learning management systems, and their chat technology. Application deadline for fall also was moved back to June, and advising has continued. Evidence-based simulation and practices was used to ensure current students can progress. Students in their final semester graduated early May. Many faculty and students are currently working in acute care facilities on frontline care patients. TMCC also donated all of their PPE to local hospitals. For UNR, their Orvis School of Nursing kept their RN and APRN students on track for graduation, even without hospital placement, using things like iHuman virtual simulation, telemedicine, interprofessional education for COVID-19. They also donated all their PPE to Northern Nevada Medical Centers. Faculty are working extra hours in local hospitals. For Great Basin College, they fast-tracked their AAS nursing students and graduated 5 weeks early, utilizing best practices and evidence-based simulation to complete it. The AAS nursing program extended their application period through June. Nursing faculty have facilitated COVID-19 screening for students in healthcare sciences faculty. They supported local hospitals and UNLV police with the PPE that was given. They gave course extensions to RN to BSN students who traveled to New York City to work and to help in hospitals and pop-up clinics. In addition, faculty completed additional best practices for online teaching. Currently, contact tracing for Elko County and some small Nevada counties that are close to Elko is being done on the GBC campus, utilizing nursing faculty, paramedic faculty, and some school district nurses. The Dean of Health Sciences is also part of the Emergency Elko County Emergency Operations Committee. For UNLV, their spring cohort has graduated and is ready for NCLEX and practice. BSN summer cohort started May 11th, and their clinical simulation center donated their PPE to UMC and their thermometers to the Las Vegas Metro Police Department. Schools of Nursing faculty and administration are volunteering at UMC, doing screening, staff, and visitors. Rigel Tan, assistant professor of nursing, made face shields that were donated to local hospitals. Assistant professor Susan Van Buge joined the Battle Born. Several alum have also been featured in their work. For the College of Southern Nevada, their ADN program also used simulation team to create a previously developed case study.
I guess we'll recess for 5 minutes or earlier if we can get the connection back. Page 10. So we have not heard or listened to you.
And I can't hear. I'm not hearing anything.
Regent Carvalho, this is Joe Reynolds. Ms. Donnelly, can you not hear us? I believe Chair Geddes would like to make a statement, if that's okay, Vice Chair Carvalho.
Yes, please.
Yes, we did lose the video link and lost the connection for everywhere. I think we will need to reschedule that last presentation for the next meeting, since most of us didn't get it. But if you could go ahead and call for public comment for the Health Sciences Committee to make sure that any of the public have a chance, and then we can adjourn that meeting and
new business.
Oh, yes, new business and then public comment.
Amber, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me, Nate?
Yes, they're trying to figure it out in the other room.
Okay,
This is Joe Reynolds again on the record. Ms. Donnelly and a Vice Chancellor.
Dr. Donnelly, can you hear me?
Chair Carvalho, I would recommend that you move on to the new business item number seven.
You can hear me?
Yeah, this is Chair Geddes.
Hi.
I'm sorry, the video link.
I just sent her a text.
Are you there?
But you guys can hear me, right?
We can in Nate's office. None of us in the main boardrooms can hear you. So we all missed your presentation. So we're going to have to.
And I was going so fast.
We're going to reschedule you for the September meeting. They're actually just going to do new business and public comment because we did lose the link everywhere. So we'll put you on the next meeting to do the presentation. Sorry about that.
Okay. If you would just share the information that was in the PowerPoint. We'll be able to update where we're at for fall and kind of what the challenges are for nursing programs. But this is the current information for each school, if you just share that. Thank you so much, and thank you for your time.
Hey, Chair Geddes, or Nate.
Yeah.
This is Laura Perkins. I heard the whole presentation. I thought it was great.
Thanks.
I believe the board meeting will be starting on the other link now.
I think we're going to go to if there's any new business for the Health Sciences Committee.
You want me to wait, right?
See no new business. Public comment, Mr. Reynolds.
We have no public comment, Regent Carvalho.
Thank you. Then I will adjourn this meeting at 10:00.
The conference is about to end.
So that's the end.